cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to the business section of our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio today is Safia Boulay of New Habits, Making Shift Happen. Welcome, Safia.
How's it, Richard?
Last week, we spoke to Colin Timmis, Xero's head of accounting in South Africa and founder of South Africa's first accounting cloud practice. That was an interesting interview with him. Safs, you were so riveted.
Yeah,
that was scary.
I'm still confused.
You're still confused. Well, if you have an opportunity, download the podcast on that show. It's available on our website, www.thefinanceteam.co.za, or alternatively on the Cliff Central website as well. This week, our guest in studio is Veronica Aswani, co-founder and director of Wavu Now. Welcome, Veronica.
Thank you very much, Richard. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking time to be with us. So, tell us a little bit about Wavu Now and what you actually do. I found your business fascinating when I looked at it on the web.
Thanks, Richard. Wavu Now is a social enterprise. And the idea came about after the World Cup around 2011. I've always been fascinated and passionate about developing communities. And WAVU stands for safety net. It's a Swahili word for safety net. And the way that business was formed was around to assist communities who are in business to keep their business going, sustainability, and to grow their business so that we can have more jobs created from the community level. So that is how Wavu Now came to be. So we started as a social enterprise to assist crafters, especially because they have tangible products, to access mainstream markets. So being a non-South African myself, I thought the best way forward was to set up an online shop and then get it functional, and then go to different government and non-government organizations to seek for support, because the nature of the business is not something that one person can do properly. So I needed different support. So I set up an online shop, wavunow.com. I listed few crafts, and it was as raw as it could be. You could see talent, but you could see unpolished talents. You could see stories of the crafters, where they live, how they do their stuff. And you could see that you have communities who are skilled, but not your white-collar skill, not your formal skills, but they're able to do something. The biggest challenge that I found in them is that they strictly rely on tourism business. So when you know tourism is seasonal. So when the tourism business is low, then they don't sell. When the tourism is high, then they sell. So that was one factor. So when you put them on an online platform, then you make them like a whole year round shop. Okay. Mm. So that is how Wavu Now started. But the main aim was to assist communities to access mainstream markets so that they can create jobs.
Mm.
Okay.
So effectively, you created an online store.
Yes.
And a marketplace.
Yes.
For, let me call them, offline communities that don't have a traditional, you know, don't have the internet, and that, let's call it, global marketplace.
Yes.
As an access mechanism. Very,
yes.
Very interesting.
So that was the idea. But when you come up with such a platform, you have to consider the beneficiaries, who are the communities. They don't have the knowledge of how to use an online shop. They don't know how to load the pictures. They don't know the complexities of preparing a shipment, adhering to the lead times, and all those complications. So when I was setting up that online shop, I knew of all the challenges, but that was the whole point of getting other, other partners or collaborators to assist us to develop communities with using the modern technology.
Okay.
So what happened was, as soon as I launched the online shop, I started going around looking for support. And the fastest way to access mainstream market from the experience that I had was to go to corporates and supply corporate gifts that are made by communities. So the online shop did not pick the way I wanted it to pick because of the other layers of skills that were supposed to be developed from community level. Mm. So we ended up working more directly with corporates, supplying them with corporate gifts, going for exhibitions, because those are also ways of accessing mainstream market. Mm. So we were more or less successful on those other aspects than the online shop.
Okay. Ah, yes. Okay. So if I understand what you're sharing with us is you had one, let me call it route to market, and yet other markets developed, let's call it by process, around your business.
Absolutely.
And suddenly you found yourself having to attend corporate presentations and exhibitions and the likes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, correct.
Now, we're going to get back to how you develop a market for your business, because we want to talk about that in detail today.
Absolutely.
Just give us a little bit of background on Veronica, your journey in entrepreneurship, where you're from. Give us a little bit of background there.
Oh, great. I was born and raised on the slopes of Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania. I'm a second born of four children. My dad passed on 3 years ago. My mom is still alive. My siblings are all in Tanzania. I grew up right in the rural area, so I understand the rural area setup. I understand the challenges. I understand poverty. I understand entrepreneurship, because I'm surrounded by entrepreneurs back home. If you happen to travel to Kilimanjaro region and you go into rural areas, you will easily see a setup of families where the first house of the great-grandparents was made of mud. The latest house of a grandchild is a multi-story with lights, with the latest tiles and doors and all that. So I grew up in a very entrepreneurial, very trade sort of a setup. And I met my husband, who's Kenyan, in the early 2000s. And as soon as we got married in Nairobi in 2004, we moved to South Africa in 2005. So myself and my husband are non-South African, but we've lived here all along. Now, personally, my passion has always been community development. Mm. And the intention was to work for the UN or an NGO, because those are the guys who most of the time they gear their effort towards community development. But as soon as I got to South Africa, because of the complications of work permit, I couldn't get a job immediately. So I had my two children. Then I had the work, a permanent residence, mm-hmm. 7 years later. And that's how I started Wavu Now. I thought, okay, I can't get a job now. Why don't I start something by myself?
Of course.
Yes. But before that, I had tried to trade, to supply products to pharmacies for women to test their ovulation and pregnancies. They were imported from America. After that, I worked a bit in mortgage and properties, and I was assisting foreigners to buy properties in South Africa. So I can't sit idle. As soon as the kid is about 2 years and they can say, "Mom, pain or something," I'm always out looking for something else to do, because they're least dependent on you.
Okay.
So that's Veronica.
Okay. Now, let's get back to this whole question of, let's call it market development. I mean, you were almost, did you feel you were forced down a road of developing the market into the corporate space? How did that happen in your mind? Because you had a business plan, and I think this is the learning here is, you know, there's the business plan. It says I'm going to go to market using X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm,
and suddenly you start up your business and you realize that X, Y, and Z, whilst valid, actually A, B, and C are actually the channels that are going to take or are demanding, and you now find yourself, you know, do I do A, B, and C unplanned, unscheduled, unskilled, whatever it may be,
mm-hmm.
or do I, you know, go, no, square peg, square hole, I plan for X, Y, and Z, I'm only going to do X, Y, and Z, or do you allow yourself to move into A, B, and C as channels? How did you handle that? I mean, did you plan for the corporate world?
Yes and no. First of all, when we developed their business, the vision has always been to shrink the base of the pyramid, because we save our business serves the base of the pyramid, which is the community. And that's where you find poverty and employment.
Mm.
So our vision was to shrink it. And we are looking at shrinking it by doing businesses or making sure that businesses at that level are sustainable and they grow. So that has always been the vision. Now, online platform was critical because, to me, it's the way the world is functioning today. It's digital. You cannot stay away from it. But to make that particular business of online functional fully, like your Amazons, your Spree, it takes a lot.
Mm.
And it, especially from the beneficiaries. Remember that I was, for lack of a better word, I'm the middle person.
Yeah,
between the community and the end user.
Yeah, you've got complexities, and your client is two different groups of people.
Exactly. And in business, when you're dealing with communities who are not exposed to the business world, their understanding of business is completely different.
Mm.
So you have to consider all those balls to get them going. It became evident that your first sale of a product or close of a business will come from a corporate who sometimes want African authentic stuff. It could be a conference bag, it could be a lanyard, it could be a small gift that one can carry home. So it was an easier breakthrough for me. And also remember that I have over 2,000 database of people from different communities in South Africa. But when you call them and you tell them what you're trying to do, and then the next call is 6-8 months later, that is not good. So for me to be able to keep some of those with good products engaged and stimulated and excited was to get an order from a corporate where I can actually supply them goods. So within the time of developing, launching the online shop and actually get a business going, it was easier to get into corporates. And I also learned about programs around the DTI, CEDA, that they have to support small businesses. So you can travel to an international expo at the cost of the DTI under one of their programs, something that a lot of your community members are not even aware. And if they are aware, you need to have a registered company, you need to have a passport, you need to have tax clearance. All of these things are such a challenge to them. They just feel like it's an elephant and too much work. So just take my products and go with them. So I quickly, opportunistic as a typical entrepreneur, I shifted gears. The online is still there, but go to corporate, look for orders, go for international expos and see what else is out there.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you said earlier on, especially now that you're talking about international expos and corporates, one of the things that you said earlier on was that the products are quite raw and unpolished.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guide the entrepreneur so that they can fetch a better price? Because raw and unpolished very often means that the price is also quite raw and unpolished. especially given that you're a middleman now involved in this equation.
That's a very good question. And it's one of the challenges that you mentioned earlier. The market demands something, and your community member produces something completely different. In 3 years, the colors, the trends, everything in the market has changed. Your community member still produces the same thing.
Mm.
20 years later, you go back to the community. If it's a bracelet with yellow, orange, and green, that will be it. So the first thing you have to do is to work backwards. At least that was my approach. Mm. What does the market want?
Mm.
And then you can even go and get few images, few ideas, or walk into a conference and see the kind of bags that are being carried. Mm. What are is it the same square or shape or rectangular or triangle? And then you take it back to community. And then that is the longest process because you have to physically show them either through an image or a sample for them to make something, not by explaining. You have to physically, they have to see something. And then they have to develop a sample that has to be approved by a client. So there's a bit of back and forth before actually something materializes.
Okay. So you're like an R&D department?
Everything.
I mean, before you're the marketing department.
And then R&D, product development, anything and everything, yes.
Okay. I was going to say, I'm hearing almost product enhancement, almost... I guess it's almost packaging the product because it's like this is what's going to sell and this is how it's going to sell and this is the let me call it, the format that's going to appeal and where the demand will be at. It's almost, and I was going to comment about your earlier statement, you know, most businesses find themselves in a scenario where they have to develop their customer base and develop their market from, let's call it, a sale perspective.
Yes.
It sounds like you've had to develop your market, develop the sales end of the system, as well as the supply side of the business. And both, well, the one didn't exist, full stop, yes, on the demand side.
Yes.
You've created the demand, and I guess the demand was there, but it was there in a different way. So you shaped the demand.
Yes.
And on the supply side, you've had to go with a, let me call it, an aggregator type of model where you collect like-minded individuals together, and you've created, let's call it, a collective approach that, yes, allows you to create. You've effectively created a marketplace. In a very different way, and it's a very specialized market. It's a specific and complex marketplace.
Yes.
I think anything that has, let me call them, physical product,
mm-hmm,
you know, it's very easy to aggregate software or apps or something like that, mm-hmm, because it's on a, yeah, software platform.
Yeah.
Very different when it's physicals, yeah, because you've got tangible goods that you've got to move around and deal with.
Not only, I mean, like your production is dispersed as well.
Mm. Yes, so market's dispersed and, yes, and supplier is, yeah, dispersed. So, yeah, it's the ultimate in distribution nightmare, as they would call it.
Absolutely.
Getting it from a distributed supply chain through a supply chain and off to a distributed market space. Now, yeah, as you've gone through this process, I mean, you've identified here that corporates are key to your market development. I guess there's always been a fascination in the corporate space for something genuine and authentic, especially in the African context.
Yes.
Globally, is there that same desire and interest?
I think globally, it's quite a journey to get a client, an international client, because a lot of our African products, they're beautiful, original, and very African. Mm-hmm. When somebody comes to visit, they get all excited.
Mm.
And they can pick even 100 out of excitement because the price compared to, you know, dollar rate, yeah, it looks good. But the same product taken there, it's a different story. Okay? Mm. So they'll get excited about the big five. They find them here. But if you take the big five there, you will really find very few people who will appreciate the big five.
Yeah, it's not part of a bigger journey in their,
yes,
in their process.
Yes. So the person who can actually do carvings into a big five, you have to make that person produce something different yet unique that can fit into an international market.
Okay.
So it could be an ashtray. I know people don't smoke, but I'm just giving an example. It could be an ashtray with a rhino horn, but the functional product becomes an ashtray or a salad bowl.
Mm.
But then if you put a pure rhino, unless you're doing a certain drive, those products are not appreciated as much when you take them out there.
Mm.
Okay.
So you have to understand those dynamics.
So how do you overcome that?
Sorry?
How do you overcome that?
It's still work in progress. Okay. It's still work in progress. We do placemats and tablecloths. We do them in contemporary modern colors with a bit of an African touch. So it's yeah.
Yeah, so it's not about it being a fully African product any longer. It's just the elements that are there in a very more modern kind of...
Yes.
Okay. So you've learned to help the supplier know how to adapt their product to work with the market.
Absolutely.
So it's a true, let's call it, value through the supply chain, so to speak.
Yes.
Okay. So how do you plan to grow? I mean, what's the growth plans here?
So from the time I started... I started with a very, the focus was wide. The focus was an online shop. And an online shop, you know, you want somebody sitting in Timbuktu to load their products. You want somebody sitting in Tokyo to be able, I mean, that's the whole concept of an online shop. It makes your focus extremely wide and to a certain extent, because of the complexity that I've mentioned about the beneficiaries on one side who become the people who would list the products online and then the buyers who will come to the online shop, it makes the whole business model extremely complicated. Mm. So when I started supplying to corporates, I was able to start narrowing my focus and focus also on international expo. So with that, I have moved slowly but surely towards focused products. Okay, so what the growth plan right now is to, we are making recycled pots using paper and cement. So
hold on, run that by me again. You're making recycled
handmade pots.
Handmade pots.
Pots using cement and newspapers.
Okay.
Mashed newspapers and cement.
Yeah.
Okay. So Wavu now is moving towards identifying market-relevant products that can be made with the same skill. The person who is doing beadwork, the person who is doing woodwork, they're already working with their hands. So if you come with paper craft and you do all sorts of things using papers, it's handwork, labor-intensive, it still serves our vision of job creation. So the pots and all these other products that we're busy trying to develop is going to narrow our focus towards environmentally friendly, community-made or produced job creation products, market-relevant products that will keep us sustained as a business. Mm. That is the growth plan.
Okay, I'm with you.
I've thrown it.
Okay.
I'm with you.
So what I'm hearing from you is that when you're in the world of social entrepreneurship,
yes,
you've got to bring a lot more than just strategy to the business. You've got to bring heart to the business because you are growing people,
yes,
who would, I mean, otherwise you would literally just go to China and say, here's a spec. Mm-hmm. They produce something that looks as handcrafted as anything else.
Yes.
But to remain true to your vision, there's a lot of heart, and absolutely, through that heart, you're almost biting a bigger bullet than you would need to bite ordinarily, yes, if you were just, yeah, an ordinary commercial enterprise.
Yes, absolutely. You're very right. It's almost an emotional journey, for lack of a better word. The heart is fully involved.
Yeah.
You have to remain objective that the business keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be ready to shift gears. But by the end of the day, you have to deliver what you had intended to deliver all along.
Mm.
For me, South African communities are extremely skilled,
wow,
but extremely unmotivated and extremely, okay, unrecognized. If the statistics of 2010 or 2011, there are more than 400 crafters that were registered. I bet that number is triple if all of them were registered. Mm. Try and imagine half of those or even a third of those actively producing something that you and me can consume. Yeah. You will reduce unemployment by a huge yeah, percentage. And that's how I see communities here.
Okay. And what is your biggest challenge in terms of working with the crafters and bringing them into an online world? Because the more they're active on an online world,
yes,
the more they're accessing a market.
Absolutely. So 2014, almost 2 years into the business, I had approached different government institutions for help because I needed help. And I went to IDC and eventually they funded my operations for 1 year. And the intention was I need to train communities on how to use social media. Simple, take a picture of your product, put it on Facebook and talk about yourself. So I trained about 80-something community members, some in Benoni, some in Dipsloot, and some in the Vaal, just to use social media or what we call e-marketing. Yeah. Just simple. I got good facilitators that can explain it, WhatsApp, Twitter, Facebook, yeah, just to use those tools that a lot of cell phone companies are giving those at a very affordable rates,
mm,
just to use that. Because before you understand how to load a product online, just get busy with social media and sell your products. The thing is, with communities, you have to keep on following up with them. You have to keep on checking on them, call them, drop a line or two, and it's a very it needs a good commitment of resources.
That heart.
The heart.
Being the biggest resource.
Yes. So you ask about the challenges of communities, lack of exposure.
Okay.
I feel if communities would even have access to, you have House and Garden magazines, you have a lot of magazines that have got designs. If they even had access to those, they would be able to design something different. So they're not exposed. There's also lack of drive amongst themselves.
Okay.
Because craft has never represented any sense of pride, if you ask me.
Mm.
For my daughter to think I want to be like my mom.
Yeah.
For my son to think I want to be like my grandfather.
It's not aspirational anymore, is it?
Everybody wants to be on TV to rap music or something, because everybody, it seemed to be,
As we wrap up,
yes.
I have one critical question that I want to ask you. We always ask entrepreneurs this. Knowing what you know now, if you had back in 2010, as you were starting out in the business,
yes.
had become aware or knew about this from listening to a radio show like this,
yes.
podcast, what is the one thing that you now know that you wish you had known back then that you can share with our listeners so that they don't make or experience the same challenge that you've had going forward? So it's a little bit of a pay it forward question.
Yes. That's a very good question, and I've always... it has always, for lack of a better word, it makes you feel, I should have known this before, you know. And being a graduate student in business, I understand how important focus is, okay? I thought I was focused when I set up an online show. I wasn't.
Mm.
3 years later, I refocus. And now I have refocused even further. So the message is, be extremely focused, and you have to focus like 3-4 times, not through the business journey but through the planning, to see what makes sense. When you're actually doing the business plan or conceptualizing your business and business model, do 3-4 time refocus to make it as clear as possible. It will never be as clear, because business is a journey. I will still refocus 20 years from today, I know. But to remove you from the headache, you should focus properly.
Okay. Perfect. Veronica, some great insights there.
Thank you.
Final comment to focus. I think that's something that all entrepreneurs can learn. Yes.
Big business.
Even big business, yeah. That was Veronica Ashwani of Wavu Now. Thank you very much for your time with us.
Thanks.
Next up, the Youth Leadership Platform.
Thanks for having me. CliffCentral.com.